Inconceivable!
Brothers don't shake hands. Brothers gotta hug.
Welcome to the Cheap Seats and Stick Man Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the newest edition of Cheap Seats and the Stick Man Podcast. I am Jason Burgos with my co-host Jose Maldonado. How are you doing, Jose?
I am peachy keen, Jelly Bean. How you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm excited about the topics we're going to talk about. We're going to be covering UFC's 202's main event of Conor McGregor and Nate Diaz 2, which is going to be fun. And we're going to have a special guest to talk about it. But also, we're going to talk Hollywood beat, you know. And I love talking stuff about Hollywood and Hollywood news, TV shows, and upcoming movies and rumors. I mean, it's just a subject I like talking on.
Oh, yeah, most definitely, man. You know, as some people that know me know, movies are my passion, man. So definitely happy to be talking about the Hollywood beat and see what news is upcoming and stuff to get excited about, man.
Yeah. Now, first, we're going to start off with the UFC 202 stuff. Now, our guest tonight is going to be Dr. Paul, a.k.a. Paulie Gloves Gavone. Now, Paulie is a unique person to bring onto the show because he is as close as to an expert on the sport as you're going to get, since he is a striking coach at American Top Team, one of the more prestigious training, you know, MMA training camps and gyms in the entire industry. I mean, it has former champion Robbie Lawler. It has tons of big names. Tyron Woodley, the new champion who beat Robbie Lawler, also trains at ATT and has his own affiliates. You know, you have a lot of big stars. Paulie himself has trained Jeff Munson, an MMA legend who's fought tons of fights. Brad Pickett, who's Dana White has called one of his favorite fighters to watch, amongst many other fighters. And what's great about Paulie is he has a scientific mind, since the man actually has a doctorate in education and he has many philosophies, and he goes to schools and helps in the community in terms of leadership. He's working on his doctorate in leadership too, so the guy has a mind for people and a mind for training, along with having been a former Golden Gloves winner in Florida for heavyweight. So it's going to be pretty exciting to have someone with such a great idea and what they can bring to the show for us amateurs, you know.
Yeah, this dude is the goods, man. I mean, we try to bring nothing but the best top quality guest for our fans here, and this is just another edition of that, man. Can't wait, and looking forward to talking to him, picking his brain, and seeing what he thinks about the upcoming fight with McGregor and Diaz, and just talking about the fight game in general, man, seeing what he's what his thoughts are on the current product and what the future holds.
All right, now let's use our very, very high-tech equipment and see if we can get Mr., or I should say Dr. Gloves, involved in this call.
Hello?
Hello, Paulie!
Hey, buddy, how are you?
How you doing, Paulie? Let me introduce you to my co-host, Jose. Jose, say hello to Paulie.
Hello, Paulie. How you doing tonight, man?
Good, Jose. How are you?
Very good to meet you, man. I look forward to talking with you.
Okay, man. Pleasure.
Now, obviously, you're on with your expert, outstanding resume, understanding of striking, to talk about UFC 202's main event of Conor McGregor and Nate Diaz. But before we get into that, I wanted to just ask you a couple of MMA-related questions. Firstly, I wanted to ask you about UFC 203. CM Punk, former superstar wrestler, is going to make his debut against Mikey Gall. Now, he signed in December of 2014, so he's had about a year and a half to start his MMA training. He's had a background where he trained with Henner Gracie for a long time. As in your expert opinion, what do you think? Do you think he, in a year and a half, is that going to be sufficient enough training to even beat a guy who's, you know, slightly above him, that he's 2-0 and Mikey Gall? Is that enough training to prepare for MMA-level fights?
You know, it's really going to depend what his background is. You know, I don't know what he was doing before you know, he was heading into the UFC, or before he did, you know, the professional wrestling. So, I mean, if he had a deep background in another martial art, if maybe he did wrestling for a long time, or he had some sort of striking, like, if he has some sort of core background to fall into, then, yeah, I think that he could, you know, for a guy with a couple of fights, yeah, he could probably do well. But if he's been training for a year and a half, you know, it just really depends on the level of the fighter, you know, that he's fighting. I know nothing about his opponent, who's 2-0. I've seen some guys that are amazing. You know, they have, like, deep training. They've been doing it for years. Then you have the guys that just, you know, took a couple fights and they did well on it. But, you know, the depth of the knowledge and the skills is such that somebody, you know, somebody with not a lot of skills could beat them. So, you know, there are a lot of variables at play there.
I mean, if you were his coach, what would you prefer in terms of preparation? I mean, is it like, oh, 6 months you think you would be good enough to do? 2 years? You know, what would you advise, have advised him if you were, you know, like he has Duke Rufus as his coach or his, one of his coaches. What would you advise him if you were in that position?
Well, you know, like, for example, we had American Top Team had Steve Mako join the camp, you know, a few years back. And Steve, you know, Steve had a pedigree in, as a wrestler. So, you know, his training, they kind of put him, you know, threw him right in there to fight pretty quickly because he had such a depth in wrestling. So, again, it just is going to depend on what their background. Maybe, you know, if CM Punk had a background in amateur boxing and, you know, he fought for a while, then, you know, I would say, all right, we need to give you some, you know, the ground game, the jiu-jitsu. I mean, I'd want him to have at least, you know, if he was a great boxer, I'd, you know, a year and a half of, you know, really good jiu-jitsu and wrestling, you know. So they're just, it really just depends on what somebody's background is, honestly.
Now, Paulie, if I could chime in with a question. Oh, I'm sorry, Jay.
Not a problem at all.
Just a quick question about that to kind of touch on it with Punk and his background and everything like that. A couple of factors here leading up to the fight are, of course, his age, getting a late start in the game, and also he's had a couple of setbacks during the training, a couple of injuries, on top of the wear and tear that he's had with the professional wrestling game. How much of a factor do you think that would be in his training if you were training him, and do you think that will affect him mentally going into his first fight at such a high level?
Oh, it could, man. I mean, he's going to have a lot of pressure on him mentally. I think that's a great question. You know, you got to think, I mean, this guy knows the world's looking at him, and, you know, there's going to be a lot of doubters, particularly in the mixed martial arts community. You know, people are going to like, you know, what is this guy getting such a big shot for? Why is he getting a lot of attention? So, you know, he's got a lot to probably prove, which is going to put a lot of pressure on himself. And, you know, when you have that kind of pressure on yourself, there's really no way to prepare in camp for that pressure other than, you know, preparing the best that you can in terms of making sure you're in great condition, you're getting, you know, really good sparring so you have high self-efficacy with your ability to perform, but you just can't replicate the pressure that he's going to feel, you know, getting to the big game. Yeah.
Another question I wanted to ask you is about today, the Professional Fighters Association, you know, released a statement about trying to unify fighters to finally have a fighters union, you know, for UFC fighters. They specified just UFC fighters and not any other companies. But, you know, since you are a coach that has, you know, come into contact with so many fighters, major stars, up-and-comers, you know, do you feel there, you know, with now a major organization that has backing from, you know, top names in the NHL Players Association, MLB Players Association, representatives are behind them. Do you think this might finally be the time that we do get a fighters union? You know, do you think fighters will get behind us, or because, or will it be because they are looked at as like independent contractors and they're not a team and it's not that set in unification? Do you think it's still unlikely to happen, at least right now?
Man, you know, that's really hard to say. All I can really say is that I hope that it happens. You know, I'd like to see somebody able to protect the fighters. You know, a lot of these guys go in and they know very little about business. They don't know how to manage their money, and you know, they're taken advantage of. So having some sort of union to protect them, to advocate for them, it would be really be ideal, but it's a tough situation, as you mentioned. You know, fighters are independent. You know, it's hard to get, you know, them to have a collective voice. And you know, a lot of guys don't have money. You know, very few fighters are actually making money in the game. I mean, you will have to be in it for a while, and you have to become known. Even the guys that are in it for a while and that are known, unless you're like in that very top tier fighters, you're still not making a lot of money. You know, very few guys are making money yet. We're starting to see some more money come into the game, but it's not near where it could be. But, you know, it's growing. It's moving in the right direction, I think.
Now, so for the main event of UFC 202, now we researched and found some stats. Now, before I go into stats on the fight, the original fight, I want to go around to everybody what your eyeball test told you watching the first one. And Pauly, when you watched the fight the first time, what were your thoughts about, you know, round one, round two, like how the overall fight looked and feel, like who had the momentum, who was in control? Like, what did you think the first time you saw that fight?
Well, to be honest with you, I was looking at it through a biased eye. Like, I really believed that Nate Diaz was going to win the fight. So, when you tend to already have a thought in your head, there's something called bias confirmation. You start to look for things that kind of confirm your existing bias. So, you know, I was looking at things like, you know, Conor, you know, missing punches, you know, his punches falling short, or, you know, Diaz starting to, you know, land a couple of, you know, his long range punches, because I really believe, as you know, styles make fights, and, you know, both these guys fight a similar style. And, you know, I think, you know, it's a tough, you know, matchup for Conor to move up. And I think that was counter to, like, what a lot of people think, or, you know, believe was going to happen in the fight, given that Nate was coming off of, you know, a very short camp for the fight.
Jose, what about you? When you watched it, what did you think? Did you have any kind of feeling on one way or the other?
Yeah, I think my takeaway from it was, and it's interesting that Pauly stated that he had Diaz as the pick to win, because not a lot of people felt that way. And, you know, with an objective eye, you could tell that Diaz kind of maybe had an advantage, because you know, McGregor, I'm sure, was preparing for Aldo, and to kind of switch it up so quickly, it looked like Diaz was a lot more comfortable than McGregor was. You know what I mean? I mean, not to say that he was totally in control of the fight, but, I mean, by the end of the fight, they were both a bloody mess. But it seemed like Diaz, you know, had that chip on his shoulder coming on such short notice, given this opportunity. He took full advantage of it, and by the end, you know, McGregor looked kind of a little shell-shocked with the whole situation. I'm sure that'll change now with the rematch, now that he's had time to prepare, but I think Diaz had a more, a better scenario in that case than McGregor did, because all eyes were on McGregor, and Diaz, at this point, well, he really had nothing to lose outside of this opportunity, you know?
You know what's interesting? I'm going to be the dissenter here, and when I watched the fight the first time, in the moment, I thought Conor was winning. I thought he was doing a lot of landing major strikes. I felt that Nate looked, you know, uncomfortable. I mean, understandably so, with a week's notice. He looked kind of lackadaisical, especially considering against Michael Johnson. He looked fantastic. He looked fast, his hand speed. So I, you know, thought, man, Conor's dominating, until Nate went to his rage power and started taking over the fight, and you know, the rest is history. Now, when we look at this, when we looked at the stats, it seems, Pauly, your bias confirmation was more reality, and Jose, you were onto it more than I even understood. When you look at the stats for significant strikes, Conor McGregor threw 140 and landed 61 for 43% accuracy, while Nate Diaz threw 152 and landed 77 for a 50% accuracy rate. And these numbers are straight from UFC's main stat metric company in Fight Metric.
Straight from the horse's mouth.
And some of the more other interesting things is landed by target. And when it came to that, Diaz also had a higher percentage landed on head strikes. And he, you know, from the only statistic for Conor was from his distance, he had a better percentage, which I thought is interesting, considering he was the smaller guy he had to get in, and he was landing better from distance. Now, with that all factored in, and now, Pauly, I want to get your opinion as a striking coach. If for each guy, if you were training Nate Diaz going for this fight, how would you prepare Nate Diaz to deal with Conor McGregor a second time?
Well, you know, here's my thought. First of all, Conor McGregor for his weight class was very long. He has like a 74-inch reach, I think, and for a guy that's about 5'8", 5'9", I forget how tall he is, right around there. That's a huge reach advantage. You know, typically a guy's reach is about his height on average, maybe just a little bit more. So, you know, his reach is probably about, you know, 4 inches, you know, more than your average fighter. And that's a tremendous advantage over most guys at that lower weight class. But as he moved up in weight, you know, to such a big advantage, bigger weight class, you're moving to guys that are taller, and they naturally have a greater reach advantage. And obviously, Diaz had more of a reach advantage, and he not only does he have the reach advantage, but he uses because some guys have a longer reach, but they don't know how to relax their shoulders. They don't know how to extend their punches, so they don't capitalize on the reach advantage. So, to your question, I believe they need to train Diaz exactly the way he's done it. I think his style is the perfect style to beat Conor. I think if anything's going to happen, Conor's going to have to switch up his style to get inside Nate's reach.
Now, and in that specific switching, now let's switch it to you coaching Conor. How would you help him deal with that specific reach? I mean, he did do some good things in that fight and landed some serious shots. Like, what changes? Like, should he? I mean, he made the point that he didn't use his energy level properly and he was throwing too many heavy shots. Is it as simple as that? Is it just his weight wasn't a bigger effect? Like, what would you do if you were coaching him?
Well, I tell you, man, first of all, I think that obviously to beat a guy with longer range, I believe that you need to have a little bit of head movement. So he's going to have to slip inside some of Nate Diaz's punches, which is, you know, pretty challenging for a lot of guys. But slip inside the punches, and I believe once he gets in there, I believe he's going to have to drop big bombs because he's not going to have the opportunity to get inside that much. So when he does, he needs to take advantage of it. I also could see using some more leg kicks. Nate has been susceptible in the past to leg kicks, so I think touching him up with leg kicks. The issue is, though, if he gets inside and let's say he takes him down, you know, like you don't want to be in Nate's guard, so you got to get in, drop a bomb, and maybe roll out. You know, I think it's a big challenge for him. But I think that he was throwing some really good punches. I think, you know, if he's going to do anything, if he's going to win the fight, I believe he's going to knock Nate out. I believe that's it's a tall task to knock out somebody that is that big. But it's mixed martial arts; those are small gloves. And but I mean, you know, he's dropping bombs. He can punch, man. He's got skills.
Now, before I get your pick, I wanted to throw some extra stats at you. Now, going into the first fight, Conor was the favorite, and I believe going to this one in Vegas, he is still the favorite again, which is surprising considering he lost. Now, you know, we know the basics in that Nate came in on a week's notice, so that's, you know, there's a lot of upside to what he can do in the fight going into it. Like I mentioned before, was Conor's weight an issue? He weighed in at 168 pounds, and we saw recently with John Jones, extra weight on the fire that's not maybe their optimal size can maybe have some effect. Maybe that's where a cardio issue was for him in the first fight. Now, this I found interesting, and this is, you know, trying to play devil's advocate for Conor. Going into that fight with Nate, you know, he was supposed to originally fight Jose Aldo. Jose Aldo is 5'7 with a 70-inch reach. Now, he got a opponent, Nate Diaz, on a week's notice who was 6 foot with a 76-inch reach difference. And maybe you can explain to us how hard it is to deal with that reach. And if going into the fight now with a proper training camp, and as he's talked about, he's bringing in training sparring partners a lot like Nate's body size, how much of a difference could it make for him this time around training for that reach, which is so difficult to deal with?
Well, I mean, you make a good point, man, and it really is difficult. You have to think that Conor has been highly effective using that long-range style for many, many, many years. I mean, that is a lot of deliberate practice and a lot of reinforcement. In other words, he's been very successful with it. So you got to think that is a habit for him. So I don't see him being able to really change this habit that he's been so effective with in such a short amount of time. Again, what he's going to have to do is, because his footwork and his style is based on keeping somebody at the very end of his reach. In the Aldo fight, for example, he shuffled back in what I call micro footwork and brought Aldo to him, made Aldo miss his punch, and countered with a straight two. And that's what a long-range fighter does. He wants you to, you know, move forward, much like a matador, and he wants you to be the bull. Well, you know, Diaz doesn't rush forward. There's not going to be those opportunities for them. Therefore, if he's not rushing forward, then McGregor is going to have to come forward, because if he stays right outside, then he'll just get picked apart. Or you're going to have a very boring fight, or you might consider it a very strategic fight, like when, you know, McDonald fought Wonder Boy. Is that his name?
Wonder Boy.
Yeah, Stephen Thompson, right? So it's very strategic. They're on the outside, you know. But, you know, there's not a lot of action in there. In this case, if somebody doesn't commit to come forward, then you got two guys sitting on the outside. The guy with the longer reach is going to have the advantage. And it's not just the reach advantage because, you know, Diaz has a 2-inch reach advantage, but it's also the fact that he relaxes his shoulders, and now Connor has to punch up with his straight punches. And as you punch up, you're actually losing some of your reach advantage just because of the angle. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, like he might start using some head movement, but to become fluent with head movement to get inside reaches, if that's what he's going to do, is very difficult. Again, I would, you know, if I were him, that would be part of the game. I would use, I would try to use some more kicks, maybe to throw off Diaz's rhythm, and then, you know, try to slip inside and drop a big bomb.
Jose, do you want to jump in anything here?
Yeah, I think that's about right, you know, and you know, a little bit that Paulie touched on, a question is going to be how is McGregor adjusting to this fight, if he adjusts at all. You know, like you said, you know, McGregor's been so successful with that long reach style for so long. Would he be willing to kind of change up his game and risk maybe it having not, you know, having it not work out to kind of, you know, make up for the defeat to Diaz, or is he just going to stick to what he's good at and hope that Diaz makes a mistake, or just rely on his skill, I mean, his proven skill, you know, to his credit, of course, that it's enough to kind of win the fight. I mean, McGregor's a hell of a showman. Obviously, he's been, you know, he's very good at selling fights and talking the talk and getting in there. He's been able to back it up. Diaz kind of exposed him a little bit. How is McGregor going to react to that? You know, is he going to be able to come through with something that Diaz isn't expecting? Is his skill going to be able to win him the day? Or does Diaz really have his number? I think those are the big questions going into this fight. So it's going to be really interesting to see McGregor's adjustment and if Diaz can keep his head. You know, I mean, Diaz got, you know, arguably the biggest victory of his career. Can he keep that momentum going and, you know, kind of keep his head onto this fight as opposed to what happens after this? If he were to beat McGregor, obviously he's the top guy. So what would happen beyond that? You know, he can't look beyond Connor. He can't just think that, you know, because he got him the first time, he can get him this time as well. I'm sure that's not a problem. I'm sure he's, you know, putting in the preparation, but it's going to be a lot of mental games on both sides going into this fight and seeing who kind of comes out on top. It's going to be real interesting to see how they react.
Go ahead, Paulie.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. It is mental games. I think it really is going to fall on McGregor to make the change and make the adjustment. But even if in camp he brings in these taller guys, and that's smart. If his coaches are doing that, bringing taller guys that are going to try to play Diaz's style, I think that's very intelligent. The problem then is for whatever he's doing in camp to generalize an actual fight, because when people get put under fight time pressure, that's not replicable in the gym. They tend to fall back on their older habits, the things that worked for them before. I've seen this happen over and over and over again where I've trained a guy in the, you know, during camp, and we're going to do this and we're going to do that, and something happens, he gets hit, and he falls back onto something he did before, which was not at all part of the game plan. And that just takes a lot of years of deliberate practice to make yourself change in that way. So that's a very good point.
Now, so in case anybody from Las Vegas is listening and they want to put betting lines, or someone's going to throw down a $10,000 bet and they're going to get this expert info from Paulie Gloves. Now, I think we kind of got an idea of what you're probably going to go with, but in the end, what would be your final pick and of who you think is going to win this fight? And, you know, what do you think the likely scenario is possibly going to be? So, you know, so you can help a bunch of people win some money.
Not that I'm taking notes or anything like that, of course.
You know, you never know what's going to happen, obviously. You know, there's so many variables in the fight, you know. But given that they're both coming in and neither one has an injury, they both had equal camps, you know, I really just have to lean on Diaz's side. I mean, honestly, I think Diaz wins this fight 9 out of 10 times. I think it's just not a great move for McGregor to come up to this weight class. I think he's going to be much more effective at a lower weight class, where his he can capitalize on his reach advantage. It's just really the worst style matchup for him. I think there's other guys he would be more effective with in a 170-pound weight class, although I think he should fight lighter. However, he's fighting the worst style that he could fight given his style.
Now, since you make that pick, it goes to a thought process I had after the first fight, thinking, okay, let's say Conor, you know, goes back to his weight division, and he fights someone like Jose Aldo and Frankie Edgar, you know, and if he loses, what does that two losses in a row do to his psychology? Now, in that case, it would have been losing out of division and, you know, then losing in the proper division. As a guy who trains fighters and, you know, has dealt with them and knows how important confidence is to any high-level professional athlete, do you think possibly losing a second fight to Nate will really damage Conor's psychology at all for such a confident guy, or could it just be written off as, this isn't my weight class, you know, this is who I'm supposed to be fighting anyway?
No, I mean, he seems like a pretty mentally strong guy. You know, I don't know him personally, but he seems pretty confident, but it could. But I would think because he's moving up in weight class, he may be able to kind of mentally justify it and say, you know what, I moved up weight class, I'm going to go back to where I was dominant. And I think coming back to that weight class, it might be important to have a good fight for him, you know. But I mean, because he's Conor McGregor, there's going to be no easy fights for him. They're going to put him in there with, you know, people that are going to be tough. You know, it remains to be seen. But I think he'll be okay moving back down.
Jose, is there any final questions you would like to ask Paulie?
I guess I hate to ask for specifics, but how do you know? Obviously, you got Diaz to win. How do you see him winning it, man? I mean, you know, Diaz is known as, you know, as a kind of a submission specialist and ending fights on a submission, like he did with Conor. Finally, got in that rear naked choke to end the last fight. Do you see that happening again, or do you see this one kind of going the distance and going to a decision?
No, I actually could see it going that way again. I mean, look, if Conor's going to win the fight, I believe he's going to need to take it to Diaz. And, you know, if you're moving forward trying to take it to Diaz, you're putting yourself into a position where, you know, if it goes on the ground. I mean, you know, this guy is masterful off his back. I mean, just crazy. He's got those long legs, and, you know, Diaz is, you know, not that big of a guy, you know, at 5'8". So, I mean, you know, he'd get thrown up into a triangle, lickety-split. So, yeah, I see it going somewhat similar again, unless, you know, he happens to catch Diaz with some sort of crazy punch. I see it going in the same direction.
Yeah, it's fair.
I thank you so much, Paulie, for coming on. Is there anything you'd like to plug before you go, like a Twitter? Anybody can follow you on Twitter or any other websites like LinkedIn or your website or anything you'd like
favorite
to
favorite restaurant chain?
Yeah, stuff, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, man, you know, follow me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, follow me on Instagram, Dr. Paulie Gloves or Paulie Gloves on LinkedIn, Paul Gavone, you know, check out some of my articles. It was great for you guys to have me, man. I enjoyed the conversation. And
thanks for coming on, man. This was great. Yeah. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much again, Paulie. Have a fantastic night, sir.
All right. Good night, guys. Bye-bye.
Good night.
All right. That was our guest, Paulie Gloves. I think he really brought some really good expert $10 word analysis that made us look like chumps.
All right, come on now, man. I hope everybody was taking notes. Well, we were taken to the learning tree, as you could say. But he brought some real expert analysis. It was really cool to hear, you know, the insight from somebody who's been in the fight game and, you know, really knows what he's talking about, really knows his stuff. So it was awesome having him on, man.
Yeah. Now, segueing away from UFC talk, that was fun. Now we're going to go to
which
Hollywood
is what we do.
Beat. And I think we have some really juicy nuggets of Hollywood stuff to talk about that's going to get some really fascinating, some line-in-the-sand-building conversation going on here. Now, firstly, the first thing we want to talk about is The Wrap is reporting this week from a source familiar with the project that a legitimate to the 2013 Man of Steel is in active development. Jose, thoughts on legitimate sequels?
Well, emphasis on legitimate, because we all know Batman vs. Superman was basically a Batman movie guest starring Superman.
Yes.
But
yes. That's why he got second billing, because no one cared. That poor man.
Of course, it's just like, Like, yes, Ben Affleck is Batman, and Henry Cavill's back. But Ben Affleck is Batman. Orphan.
He had to live with some old people. He had to watch his father die in a tornado. And you can't. And then he killed the man. He was a longshoreman. He had a terrible beard. And then you can't even give him the top billing in his own sequel?
Not so much, man. He had, the marketing had his kryptonite, so to speak. Yes. But boom, thank you very much. Appreciate that. I'm here all week. But I definitely in the minority when I say this, but and of course you know this. I tend to be kind of a DC apologist, but I very much enjoyed Man of Steel. Of the three DC movies in the cinematic universe, I still think it's the best one. Suicide Squad is a close second, and I'm sure we'll touch on that on another time. But I really like Man of Steel. I thought it was a lot better than people will give it credit for. It's one that I go back to and still enjoy watching. And to see a legitimate sequel in development, I'm excited about it just because I think he needs it at this point. You know, like we said, he got very little in Batman vs. Superman outside of, his relationship with Lois and his conflicting opinions.
Martha!
Martha, and of course we got, we emphasized the name of his mother, which was Martha, and that now notorious and very famous and very popular meme at this point. hopefully they kind of right the ship and give him something, a little meatier to chew on in his own sequel that isn't, Batman screaming at him, "Why did you say that name?" That's very important, but I'm hyped about it, man. I don't know about you, Jay, but how do you feel about it?
I mean, I have a lot to say about DC, and my rant will be at the end of the segment. But in terms of this, I think it's a good thing for them. It's probably what they should have to do. But again, as I've talked about in certain places, it just made his death. Spoiler alert! Whoops! Spoiler! Oh, sorry.
Oh, did you just spoil that movie. The movie that's currently on Blu-ray.
You saw it. Well. But his passing in Batman vs. Superman, it just made it lose its weight and meaning. I already had questions about the meaning in that movie, but the fact that we already know he's in Justice League and that he's, there's no surprise that he's going to come in this movie. It's the weight of that, which is supposed to be this inciting incident that makes the Justice League form, it's unfortunate and kind of wasteful. It is what it is. Moving on.
It is a waste. That's a really good term because, they really just rushed it. The death of Superman should be really, really important. And here they tacked it on the movie that he was, barely the focus of. They put it to where we haven't gotten as familiar with the character as we should. He had 1.5 movies, and all of a sudden his most important story arc happens. And it felt like a rush job, like you said, to kind of get everything going. Not to mention that there's no emotional heft to it because we know he's coming back for Justice League.
Yeah.
And now they announced the Man of Steel sequel, so this is pretty meaningless. And this is one of the most vital and well-known storylines in comic book history. And here it's going to be pretty much an afterthought in the cinematic universe. It's a shame.
Yeah. And if, since they've already used it, if they were, let's say they had a successful sequel and they wanted to make a part 3, part 4, if you wanted to do part 3, Doomsday, that would have been a great, end of a possible trilogy. And it's been completely blown up and wasted. And we can talk for hours on Lex Luthor, but we don't want to go on. We want to go on to the next story, which is an actual interesting story. And, Hollywood going into a more of a trying to reinvent things with more of a feminist, women leading the charge kind of thing, which is great. According to Deadline Hollywood, Warner Brothers is reportedly working on solidifying deals with Sandra Bullock, Kate Blanchett, Anne Hathaway, Rihanna, Helena Bonham Carter, Mindy Kaling, and Awkwafina, who this is the first time I've ever heard of her. I guess I'm showing my age here. For an Ocean's 11 spinoff movie called Ocean's 8. I mean, if they can lock that in, that is a phenomenal cast for a movie.
It really is, man. I mean, I'm for it. I'm sure they'll get the same people that were groaning about the all-female Ghostbusters to start groaning about this. But yes. You know what? Just get your panties out of a twist, fellas.
Yes.
Look at the talent on board with this. If they lock up this cast, you're talking Oscar winners in Sandra Bullock and Kate Blanchett, Oscar nominee and Anne Hathaway, Asuka nominee with Hell in the Bottom Carter, who has a solid body of work. Mindy Kaling has been, you know, on everybody's radar as an up and comer. She's done some really good stuff, some really funny stuff. She'd fit right in with this cast. Be interested to see Rihanna. She brings star power to it. How she can handle that kind of a role. Awkwafina, don't know much about her, but if they lock down this cast and, you know, the talent involved, I heard Clooney's going to be on kind of as a producer as well. If that's true, I see this going really, really well. There's some really good talent here, and I see this being a really entertaining flick.
Yeah, no, I mean, and what's great about it is it's really on par with Ocean's 11, the George Clooney version, and it's really, you know, you want to have those names, and they're trying to cover all bases similar in certain ways to the Ocean's movie, and, you know, you could draw in so many audiences, and if you got the right kind of script writer and the right director, I mean, that with that cast, that's just money, and it's fascinating to see. I mean, I'm curious how it plays out. Moving, you know, considering that you brought up Ghostbusters, our next story is on our next scoop or information we got is on the Ghostbusters movie, and it opens up this whole talk about, you know, this weird butthurt man no ma'am attitude for some of these movies. Now, the Hollywood Reporter has a story mentioning that Sony will be in the red, meaning they're going to lose money up to $70 million for the recent Ghostbusters movie, which I personally saw it, thought it was really cool, really fun, good entertaining. Now, because of this, a sequel is unlikely, and a rep for Sony, this is a quote, a rep for Sony from the article says the studio actively is pursuing an animated Ghostbusters feature that could hit theaters in 2019 and an animated TV series, Ghostbusters Ecto Force, which is eyeing an early 2018 show. So it looks, unfortunately, like there's not going to be a sequel for this new redo of the series, and they're heading in the cartoon route, which is interesting because Sony, maybe this is a new initiative by them, because there's always been a lot of talk and there's been confirmation there's going to be a Spider-Man animated movie too, which should further confuse everything. But it's too bad because we've both talked about it, this weird backlash the film got because of its all-female leading cast, which I thought were great, you know, and they have great chemistry. And this, you know, it beat records in YouTube for dislikes for no good reason. And, I mean, like, you know, that would be the thing that would make me worry a little bit. If I was putting together even the Ocean's 8 movie, unfortunately, that there's this weird backlash to that. Maybe it's different with that because Ghostbusters is held so dear to the heart for a generation of people. Maybe that's what it was. Or maybe part of what hurt the film is maybe just Ghostbusters, it's time passed. And it just wasn't, you know, making a big difference and making it, you know, anything interesting for the current, you know, filmgoers. And it's unfortunate. I mean, what do you think about all this stuff going on?
I mean, that's a really good point about, you know, Ghostbusters kind of not touching. And before I continue, a message to all the fanboys out there who were really peeved about this Ghostbusters ruining your childhood. Listen, Ghostbusters is readily available on Blu-ray, on DVD, on streaming. I'm sure you can find it somewhere and watch it. 2016 Ghostbusters did not erase it from existence. Nope. So it's still out there. Perfectly fine for you to watch. It's totally fine. Just relax.
And also, now, before you make your point, I also want to add on to that great point, is that people are so bothered by this thing. If you have anywhere to look for blame, look to Bill Murray. They tried many a time to make a sequel to this movie, and this guy shut it down and had no thanks responses every time, and that's why it never happened. Blame the people that were part of it, not the people trying to actually continue the brand and this, you know, well-known idea.
Yeah, at this point, this is basically the best that they can do. And honestly, I thought the results were totally fine. Like you said, the cast worked really well together. I thought it was a funny movie. Was it perfect? No. Was it a disaster? No. It was a perfectly fine movie, much funnier than a lot of the movies that have been put out this year that have tried and failed. I thought it was a hoot, and you know, it's a shame that it won't be getting most likely won't be getting picked up for a sequel, because you can see where they laid the foundation for a pretty decent franchise, even having Hemsworth involved as the kind of the reversal of roles as the dumb blonde receptionist.
Yeah, he was great
in the role, man. He was hilarious. Yeah. Showed a side of himself that we've rarely seen outside of, you know, the Thor franchise.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of exciting stuff.
You mean there wasn't eye candy like that in Black Hat?
Oh, come on now. You know, I mean, aside from Black Hat, which he came out topless. No, I'm kidding. But Yeah, he was totally good in this. It really is a shame that it didn't find the audience to kind of prove the naysayers wrong, because it really deserved it. It was a totally fine film. As far as the direction they intend to go with the animated series and the animated movie, animated series, yes, I'm for it. Animated movie, not so much. I don't know what it is about. With animated feature films, I tend to lean towards more of the original content than I do the established franchises, with the exception of something like Mask of the Phantasm, which is a classic. But you know, with stuff like the Spider-Man movie that they're planning, animated movie, and a Ghostbusters animated movie, I'm not as excited to see that, just because, like you said with Spider-Man, they're looking to relaunch it now with Tom Holland aboard. He's going to have his own standalone flick. Where does the animated film fit into that? If it's not part of the canon, it makes it kind of pointless. If it is part of the canon, it's just going to convolute things. Same thing goes for this Ghostbusters. I would rather them continue on with this tangent and see if they can maybe, you know, do better the next time, kind of attract some of that audience. I mean, I understand it's a lot of money to put on the line, especially when they're this far into the red. But I'd rather see the ladies get a shot than just them throwing their hands in the air and saying, all right, on to the next thing.
Now, this next story is not April Fool's. This is a legitimate story. This is actually going to happen. When I heard about it, I was like, you have to be kidding me. The Hollywood Reporter also posted a news story this week that VH1, quote, has gone straight to series on Martha and Snoop's dinner party. Now, not Martha from Batman and Superman, not that Martha. That might be more interesting.
Martha!
And not Snoopy, you know, from the Peanuts. Again, Martha and that Snoopy, I think I'd be interested in. No, this is Martha Stewart and the Snoop DLG are going to have a weekly series in which Martha Stewart and Snoop DLG throw a joint dinner party. And it's already got a 10-episode deal, and it's going to debut in the fall. Why, God, why?
I mean, that's what I'm asking. I mean, you know, the natural fit would have been Flavor Flav. I mean, come on, Flavor of Love, man.
There you go. Come on,
bring that back. But I don't know what the hell to make of this one, man. Martha Stewart probably needs a paycheck.
Yes.
Probably needs to be back in the public eye. Snoop can do no wrong in my eyes. I mean, dude made a cameo in Pitch Perfect 2 and was hilarious. The dude can do no wrong in my eyes. But even this one kind of has me shrugging my shoulders like, okay.
Yeah.
I suppose. Also, I mean, another missed opportunity. They should have brought Busta Rhymes in. If anybody remembers the VMAs back in the day when Busta Rhymes kind of presented that award together, that was an odd couple they needed to bank on, man. Not Snoop Dio Double Jizzle.
Yeah, I don't get it. I mean, it could open up, sure, some interesting groupings and, you know, unique people getting together, but if there was some kind of reputation of both of them being great interviewers or opening up great conversation and asking questions, I'd be like, okay, that makes sense. If it was like Kevin Smith and, you know, Kesha or something, like, at least Kevin Smith's there. He could probably, you know, ask some questions. But none of them have it. So it's like, what are they going to talk about? Weed and napkins all the time? I mean, come on. I just don't know.
I'm real interested to see Snoop's ingredient list for some of those recipes.
Yes. I mean, this really is throwing the proverbial you-know-what against the wall and seeing if it sticks at this point and using their name value to see what happens. And it's going to be a car wreck, I'm sure. So it probably, in our society today, will be a huge hit and be,
of course,
you know, opening for, you know, the Kardashian show soon enough. Now, moving on to my rant segment, or section of the segment, is...
Begin a rant now.
Now, Suicide Squad, most of us know, hopefully if you're listening to this, you kind of know, I've heard, it didn't get very good reviews. Now, it didn't get Batman versus Superman reviews, it didn't get John, what was that movie, John Whatever from Mars, do you remember that?
John Carter?
John Carter from Mars. It didn't get those. It didn't get, like, Wolverine Origins kind of reviews. But it got very mixed reviews. Despite that, the voice of, I don't care about reviews, those people went out in full force, and the movie made $135 million in its first weekend at the box office. Now, to let that set in on how big a deal that is. Now, it's... wasn't bigger than Batman vs. Superman or Civil War this year, which were huge, but it is right behind them as the third highest grossing movie so far this year. Now, to further add to that weight, to put more, whoa, what? is that it had a better opening weekend than both Deadpool and Guardians of the Galaxy. Guardians of the Galaxy had a $94 million weekend, which, again, almost $40 million more. Though I will add this caveat, because that is going to be the common comparison with these movies. If there was no Deadpool or Guardians of the Galaxy, Suicide Squad would have saw the light of day, especially Guardians of the Galaxy.
Absolutely.
And the big question, and it's starting to get answers. I see early reports about it. Now, for Batman vs. Superman, unlike Civil War, which was strong, and Guardians, which was very strong, Batman vs. Superman had a 65% drop-off in the second week. Now, that's the big question going on for this movie, while something like Guardians of the Galaxy, as comparison, only had a 55% drop-off. Early reports, though, I read yesterday, is that Guardians of Suicide Squad had a $14 million Tuesday, which was actually better than Guardians of the Galaxy, better, of course, than Batman vs. Superman. And here was the key. It was a better Tuesday than Civil War was, which says a lot about this. And if this movie has staying power, that's huge. Now, I will let you speak on it since you have seen the movie. I haven't seen the movie. I'm in no rush. I like reviews. I believe in them most times. I feel they have a similar thought pattern as me. You saw the movie, your thoughts on it, and what this being a major success, this, you know, with its pros and cons, do mean for this DC Unified Universe and Warner Brothers going forward.
Yeah, this is a very interesting case. Like you said, with Suicide Squad, it's funny. The reception, I mean, to be fair, at this point in time, it has a lower percentage on Rotten Tomatoes than Batman vs. Superman. But like you said, the review seemed a little more indifferent as opposed to the vitriol that was tossed at Batman vs. Superman. People were just kind of like, it's okay, it's fine, or it's kind of a mess, but, you know.
Yeah, I've read good beginning, so-so second half. I've read that a lot, too.
And that's totally fair. You know, I kind of didn't know what to do. And, you know, it had a great little setup to the squad and kind of didn't know what to do with them. The reason I think Suicide Squad will be a little bit better off is because it's a little more enjoyable. You know, like, I thought Batman vs. Superman was totally fine, but it was kind of a slog. You know what I mean? It took itself very serious, very heavy-handed, real darker tone. Suicide Squad, honestly, it's a blast. It really is. You know, it is kind of a hot mess. But the characters are having fun. You know, I, that's the best. That's the best thing. That's the best way I could put it.
So,
man,
it's almost
it's kind
like
of a
the thought
really
of superhero movie, sort of like you can look at it, enjoy, but you wouldn't really want to date it.
Pretty much, that's how it is, man. You know, what I mean, you go out, you know, you take her out to the bar, but you don't bring her home.
Okay.
But honest to God, you know, it's not as bad as people were expecting it to be. It's totally enjoyable. The storytelling is where it suffers the most. It really has no focus. It's kind of all over the place, and a lot of that has to do with the reshoots that they put in. I'm sure there was a fight in the editing room for the final product.
Yeah, as much as they denied it, but yeah.
Yeah, and as far as it goes to the numbers, very impressive numbers with the $135 million, and you know it's crazy that it beat like Guardians of the Galaxy. It even beat Deadpool this year. But there's caveats with those numbers, too. I mean, that's the whole thing about box office numbers. You can always find a point and a counterpoint. Like, for example, being that it had a $135 million weekend more than Deadpool, Deadpool came out in February, which is notoriously not a good month for movies.
Yes.
And also Guardians of the Galaxy, $94 million, despite having really characters that people weren't familiar with, whereas Suicide Squad had arguably the most famous comic book villain of all time with the Joker. And Harley Quinn, which I think is people shouldn't underestimate the drawing power of Harley.
Yes,
and bringing in the female.
I read that supposedly the numbers were saying that the audience for the film leaned much heavier than usual female than a lot of these movies do, which shows the power of that character, how popular she is.
Oh, for sure, man, and I witnessed it firsthand, man. I mean, there was a really big female crowd and I went opening night, so that was a. You see a lot of females in there, most of them there to see Harley. She really is that popular of a character. As far as the Big Tuesday goes, you know, it's awesome that, you know, it's real interesting that it has that holding power throughout the week, beat all those movies. But, it could be kind of an apples to oranges comparison just because Civil War was out in May where kids were still in school, whereas Suicide Squad is here on summer vacation where kids have a little more time on their hands. They can go and, you know, check out the movie during the week. So while it's a victory for Suicide Squad, and I'm definitely rooting for it, hope it gets, you know, a much better second weekend than Batman vs. Superman had, and it should, considering the numbers are a little more manageable. It's still kind of a wait-and-see kind of thing. Like, people are saying things like it's a flop or it's a failure. It's way too early to tell. It really is.
And also, a thing to add to it is, and this goes against Guardians, too, because it came at the same time, it's coming out in the weaker part of the summer season. August is, you know, notoriously known as, like, kind of, you know, okay, throw that one out there at the end. It's kind of the end of the season.
The dumping period.
Yeah, I mean, and that's where Expendables had so much success in its first few go-arounds, because it came out in August, it was unique, there's not a lot of competition. This is going to be an interesting week, because you have Peach Dragons coming out this week, so it should be interesting, but since already, you know, see how it does in the week, and maybe it has a strong Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then when Peach Dragon comes out, there is a drop-off because there actually is competition, you know, but like I said, same thing except for Guardians, because Guardians came out on a August date as well, so.
Right. Yeah, and that's more of a fair comparison with Guardians of the Galaxy, just because, like I said, you know, an August release date, early August, and movies like that tend to do well in August just because, like you said, there's the big blockbusters have already pretty much come and gone. There's kind of a fatigue setting in, so people just want to go to the movies and have a good time. Guardians of the Galaxy was definitely a good time, and Suicide Squad is in that similar vein. So I think it'll do well, but I've been wrong before, and Warner Brothers really needs this one, so it kind of reeks of desperation in terms of the DC Cinematic Universe.
Do you, I mean, before I get into my stuff, do you feel it puts them back on track with... Not even track about the universe going to be good. I mean, we'll see. They have a lot to prove. Warner Brothers and DC have a very sketchy history with their movies. Do you think it puts it maybe back on track to get fans back? You know, to maybe fans that got turned off so by Man of Steel, which was very divisive. Batman versus Superman was downright like a protest against having an enjoyable, fun superhero movie. Does this maybe bring the fans back and say, you know what, those two were so-so, but I see with Suicide Squad, they got some fun stuff and they set up some nice breadcrumbs going forward. Can it be that movie that, you know, grabs the fans back?
I think it can. I really think it can. You know, there was a positive buzz going out of the theater. There was a positive buzz throughout the showing. You know, people were responding to it well. It had some funny parts. That was the big difference with Suicide Squad, is that, you know, it's so ironic because this being the movie with the darker characters had a lighter tone. It's crazy, but this was a fun movie. It really was. It was just, you know, kind of an outright fun movie, and it did lay some groundwork, you know, not to get into any spoilers here, but it did set up a couple of things that may turn out to be interesting. We got our introduction to Jared Leto's Joker. I'm sure there'll be more on him with Affleck's Batman movie, maybe even sooner with something like Justice League. But I think this kind of righted the ship a little. It points it into the right direction and kind of gives us hope. And even more so with, you know, before the movie, as I'm sure a lot of people have seen online already, they showed the Wonder Woman trailer, which looks promising. So I think Suicide Squad was a step in the right direction. It shows that they're listening to the fans. Kind of, you know, making some corrections, trying to make some adjustments. It was kind of a mess because of it, because, you know, I'm sure they had one vision for it, saw the reaction to Batman versus Superman, then kind of changed course. But Suicide Squad was not the outright disaster people were assuming it would be, and I think it was a step in the right direction for DC. I'm rooting for them.
I mean, the entire thing is very interesting. Now, as a fan of superhero movies, and, you know, any time they were coming out, I've seen a lot of Warner Brothers DC movies. Now, I've also been burned so many times by their movies. Now, you know, I will unabashedly admit I am a Marvel fan. I am a Marvel guy. I've been a Marvel guy since my older brother showed me Wolverine 1 when I was like 11 years old. But I do love DC. I love Batman. Was a huge Green Lantern fan. And then... you know, they SHAT'd on me when they made the Green Lantern movie, which was another debacle. I mean, Suicide Squad, I'm still on the fence if I want to see it. I mean, people I respect, like yourself, enjoyed it, which makes me want to see it. But in this day and age, the days of $4.50 matinee movies are over, and it's kind of pricey to go to a movie and be worried about it. And since I spent my money on Batman vs. Superman already this year, I am just so iffy. Now, with that said... I'm very curious how it plays out. What they're doing, and it's, you know, you brought up the Wonder Woman trailer, which I was very mixed on. I was so on about it. It looks like it has some interesting things, and it looked like it could be, I don't know what. Surprisingly, and I thought I would dislike it, and I've watched it probably three times now, I was very impressed when they introduced the Justice League trailer at San Diego Comic-Con, because that actually had some fun tones into it.
Yeah, it did.
Now, the thing that, as a fan, I've had, you know, debates about this at the Debate Central Place Facebook, where you debate your friends, and it's like 17 paragraphs long.
That's pretty much how it goes down, man. And I love sitting back and watching that stuff, man. It's more entertaining than most movies that get released.
I've seen enough movies with special effects and explosions in my life that I've seen it all. If you're going to give that to me, I want to have some kind of story, some kind of interesting acting. You know, I want some depth. We've seen it. You know, we had, when we got Batman and Superman back in the day and all these kinds of movies, we were fine with it because we were just happy to get it. Now we've gotten it, and Marvel Studios, not Marvel Movies, Marvel Studios has delivered really a pristine, very solid, always consistent product with all their movies, and the depth of their movies is always about trying to do the best story, and they get the best actors. And the thing I don't like about what WB is doing is that they seem to be going for either names or who's hot or things like that when they're casting their roles. Now, of course, you're going to get some lesser names because, you know, big names are much more expensive. But when you see the San Diego Comic-Con panel with Justice League, it's a nice panel. You know, Ben Affleck's well-known, but he's not well-known for his acting, and he's not directing these movies yet. So that's a so-so thing. Jason Momoa, he pretty much just plays the same guy every movie.
To great effect, mind you, but...
you know, Ezra Miller, that was the most impressive thing about the trailer. Ezra Miller looked really good as Flash, and Henry Cavill is Henry Cavill. I mean, I don't know what else to say about that. Now, and then you go and see the Marvel panel, which had nothing to do with Thor, it had nothing to do with Iron Man, nothing Captain America, nothing Avengers, nothing Ant-Man, nothing whatever. You see this stellar lineup of just... You know, it's like an Actors Guild wet dream of amazing actors. You got Chadwick Boseman, Oscar-nominated. Tilda Swinton, Oscar-nominated. Rachel McAdams, Oscar-nominated. You got, I can't say her name, I don't want to butcher it, but the woman that won for,
Lupita Nyong'o.
Yes, Oscar winner. You know, that, just to name a few, what do we have? I mean, Tom Holland, is everybody's high on his talent. What else? They had Black Panther there. They had...
Benedict Cumberbatch, Doctor Strange.
Cumberbatch! Another Oscar-nominated...
In the background of the group photo, man. It's like, yo, Cumberbatch would be front and center in most panels. Dude was just one of the guys. Crazy.
Baron Mordo, I don't want to butcher his name, but Chiwetel Ejiofor, I think that's how you say it. I could be wrong.
We're going with it. Yeah, absolutely, man.
You know, they bring the substance with the acting chops, and that's why they're so good. And that's why I think DC misses the boat sometimes. They almost want the in-house people that they've worked with or that are hot, trending. You know, they look at the trending Twitter, like, who's trending now? Oh, maybe he could play this player. You know, it just, that's the unfortunate thing about it. You know, I don't know how I feel about the DC movies. Like, on a level, I would like it to do well, but on a level, I don't want it to do well because I've been so burned and frustrated with them. I'm hoping when I do eventually watch Suicide Squad, that is the movie that changes my mind on things. But I'm not overly enthusiastic about their slate coming up in that. Nothing against Wonder Woman. I just wasn't a Wonder Woman fan growing up. It's just never been a character that I gravitated to with the whole Amazon and, you know, the Lasso of Truth. But that's going to be an interesting experiment that they're getting out in front of Marvel in terms of finally having a female-led superhero movie, which is huge. And in that level, if we saw the reaction with Harley Quinn, that could do very well. And that's a monumental moment. But as a fan, I'm so. Aquaman or Namor, just never been thrilled with those characters, but at least Namor is a schmuck and a doucher, so, you know, that's a fun character in itself. And The Flash, I'm mixed on that too, because they have a TV show already. I've been watching 2 years of a TV show. I've kind of seen it, and I'm going to kind of see it again. Like, if they do Reverse Flash, in the movie, it's like, I just saw 20-something episodes 2 years ago of this same story. Like, how are you really going to change it? Are you going to change it the wrong way? You know, that's a whole other thing they're doing that I don't get, and having this, you know, DC TV and movie thing that's separate. And honestly, I think they just want to do that to maximize money, but they fell ASS backwards and say, oh, a multiverse. There you go. It makes sense. It's a multiverse. So it's different. You know, alternate your timeline. There you go.
Sure, sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, DC's, you know, the experts at the cop-out with the multiverse thing. But it's really interesting that you bring that up, because it's going to be interesting to see if they do end up splitting their audience, because I'm sure there's fans of the show that will not accept Ezra Miller as the Flash, yes, and vice versa.
Yes.
So
if, you know, fanboys kind of like get bothered by women as Ghostbusters, what are they going to do with that?
Yeah, you know, and the one saving grace there is that up to now, Ezra Miller has looked charming in the role, yeah, from the Justice League trailer and, yep, you know, from the little bit that we've seen of him, but it's going to be interesting. It really is.
And he's bringing the levity to the character and the ensemble that it's desperately needed that wasn't there for Batman versus Superman. So, I mean,
wait, what are you talking about, man? Henry Cavill was a model of humor.
Of course. I mean, it was like Rodney Dangerfield and, you know, Lenny Bruce. It was just like these legends of comedy.
Hey, you guys, no respect. No respect at all.
So, I mean, it's yeah, I don't know what to think of it. We'll see how it plays out. All I know is I'm super excited for Luke Cage and Doctor Strange still to come. You know, in the end, on the horizon, there's so many interesting things. You know, it's fun conversation. I mean, do you have any final thoughts on our UFC talk or movie Hollywood? I mean, I'm sensing you're already planning to DVR Martha and Snoop's the dinner party.
Oh, man, I got space saved, man. I'm deleting all kinds of stuff to, you know, clear way for that, man. But aside from that, obviously entertaining nugget that's yet to come. It looks like we got a lot of things to look forward to, man, both with UFC, that McGregor-Diaz fight is going to be something, CM Punk's long-awaited debut, curious about that, and in terms of movies, man, you know, I mean, you know, regardless of how Suicide Squad is received the second weekend or not, man, it's a hell of a time to be a comic book fan, man, because, you know, right now, comic book fans are ruling the box office. Never thought this day would come, but you know what? It's our time to shine, man, and we're getting some really, really, really entertaining movies out of it, and hopefully DC can follow suit and give us the goods, man.
As they say, nerds are taking over the planet. For two nerds here, thank you for listening to the Cheap Seats and Stickman podcast. I mean, if you like the show, if you hate the show, whatever you feel about the show, hit us up with comments. You can follow Jose at Stickman Cinema on Twitter. You can follow me at Cheap Seats Chat on Twitter. You can follow the YouTube channel. You can search Cheap Seats and the Stickman. You can also find us on Google Play and iTunes to download. If you don't want to watch on YouTube, you want to listen to it, download it, you put it on your phone, listen to it in the car, you can search us both on both sites by the same name, Cheap Seats and Stickman. Also, we're going to be soon to debut on Last Word on Sports Radio Station, and
awesome,
you'll have links there. So please, if you want to hit us up, suggestions, thoughts, whatever you want, just thank you for listening to the show.
Download us and take us with you everywhere you go in a totally non-creepy fashion.
All right. For Jason, he's Jose. Thanks again. See you guys later. Bye-bye.
Adios.